This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
And a warning for you that this episode of The Midpoint does contain a discussion about eating disorders, so please take care. Hello and welcome to The Midpoint. Today I'm chatting with a content creator who caught my attention on Instagram and has had me laughing ever since. Her name is Louise Boyce, but you might know her as her handle, Mama Still Got It. Now, despite some significant setbacks, which we'll discuss later, Louise established herself in the fiercely competitive world of modelling. Then COVID struck. She was experiencing somewhat of an identity crisis, so set up her Instagram account, which she describes as a reminder to all mothers and women that regardless of age, profession or life choices, we still love to look and feel good. In the war against the sometimes mundane realities of motherhood, humour is Louise's weapon of choice. And as a mum of three, she has plenty of material to draw from. Her brilliant videos regularly delight her 500,000 followers, so much so that her debut book is due to be published later this year. And with Louise's background in modelling, I thought it might be good to talk style with our expert today, the founder of Green Edit, Charlotte Handley Green. Charlotte is a stylist I've worked with for many years and is a very good friend, so I know she's going to have some great tips for all of us in midlife. Before that, though, let's find out if Mama still got it. Louise Boyce, welcome to The Midpoint.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to see you and to have you here because I've been a long-time fan of Mama Still Got It. And I was delighted that you were old enough to come on The Midpoint.
I am. Yes, it's an honour.
But actually, that's something that you talk about a lot anyway, and we'll get into that about your modelling career and still having a modelling career into your 40s, which probably seemed in your 20s like something that would never be possible.
Never, ever, no. But turns out that, you know, women in their 40s and onwards need to be represented.
Yeah.
You know, we need to see people that are slightly, you know, mature. You know, we can't buy clothes and makeup products off, you know, 20-year-olds.
All the time. As lovely as they are.
But, you know, they can't sell me an anti-wrinkle cream because I don't have any.
But I alluded in the introduction today to the tricky time you had establishing a modelling career in the very beginning. You kind of had two goes at it in a way, didn't you? You came back and kind of reinvented yourself. And it was a classic case, as so many young people find, the pressures of that industry led to eating disorders.
Yes. So I started in 1995, which, you know, it was, there was an actual trend called heroin chic. I was told, but not just me, lots of other girls were told you had to be a certain size. And if, and you were measured, you know, you go into the agency and a measuring tape was like lassoed around your entire body. And if it wasn't the right number on the measuring tape, you were literally told, get out, go lose weight. I think I was told I had to lose 2 inches off my hips in 2 weeks.
And how big were your hips at this
point? I was a size 10.
Right.
I was tiny and I was 15 and they wanted me to be a size 8. I was living home with my mom. You know, she was constantly giving me food because that's what parents do. And I really felt the pressure. And obviously this is a time before social media, before anyone had a voice. So I just suffered silently and just kind of really thought, this is my fault. I need to lose this weight so I can then be, I guess, good enough for my agency and all the, and they kept saying, you know, it's not just us saying it, it's the clients and the photographers and the stylists, they're all saying the same thing. So then you're like thinking, hang on a minute, you're all talking about my hips and I'm 15 and then you're telling me about it. So
15 years old.
I was 15, I was still a child and, you know, really wanted to prove myself that I could do it. So, and I wasn't educated enough to know how to lose weight because you're not taught that at school and I didn't need to lose weight. So it wasn't something that I ever was, it was never on my, I never thought about it. I remember being in a casting and there was a girl, you know, it's full of young girls and we're all there to try and get this job. And I saw this one girl and she ate a whole packet of digestive biscuits all in one go. And I kept thinking, how does she do that and stay so thin? That's not fair. And then she went to the loo and she was gone a while. And then she came back and like was like dabbing her mouth. And it was very apparent that she'd just thrown up. I thought it was genius. And I know that sounds awful, but I was so young and I was so desperate to obviously eat. Mm. And obviously under my mum's watchful eye, I had to eat. But then I wanted to not gain weight. So I tried it out and obviously it's not a pleasant thing to do. And this just continued and continued until it became the norm and it got so easy just to do it. And I did lose some weight, but at the same time, I lost everything else. Mm. I lost my confidence. I lost my skin complexion. My teeth got really yellow.
And the people in the agency must have seen the physical changes in you.
I don't think they did. They look after so many girls. I'm just another girl. I'm just another blonde.
A number.
You know, I can be replaced very easily. Yeah, so I just continued to do this and no one knew. And it was a really dark time. Like looking back, it was a really, really dark time. Like even talking about it now, like the feelings that I have in my body, it's like, oh God, that was horrible. And then I went to Australia to do some modeling there. And I was kind of, I think my body was a bit more accepted there because it was, I mean, my body was tiny, but I still had some curves. I still had, you know, boobs and I had.
They weren't quite as into heroin chic in Australia.
No, luckily they were more into like kind of like.
Healthy fit bodies.
Like beach vibe and surfer vibe. So I did a lot of swimwear shots out there. And I look back at the pictures now and I think, my God, my body was incredible. But I was still so hard on myself and so continued to you know, throw up after meals. But at this point, I wasn't living at home. Mm. I was away from home and I could do it more without anyone questioning anything. And then it wasn't until I came home, I think I was gone for about 6 months, I came home. And obviously, again, it's before Skype, it's before FaceTime, it's before it's before social media. So no one's, like my family didn't see me.
So there was a big shock when they saw
you. Yeah. So when they picked me up from the airport, oh my God, like it was really emotional. Like my sister and my mom were very concerned and upset and kind of like, and they didn't even have to say anything. They just started crying. And I was like, oh God, everyone's really emotional that I'm home. This is great. And they're like, no, you look ill. Like you're ill. Like, what are you doing? And my sister and I are really close. Like I'm literally like choking up talking about it, but we're really close. And she was just like, whatever you're doing, you need to stop because this isn't working for you. And you look awful. And it got to a point where work wasn't coming in because I didn't look great at all. And, I had no confidence. I had nothing. I was literally stripped of everything. I don't even recognize who that person was. It's crazy. So yeah, so she was like, enough is enough. And I, you know, because I wasn't working, I wasn't making the money. I was like, who am I losing weight for? Mm. Who am I doing it for? So then I did just stop.
Stop the work.
I stopped. I called my agency and I said, I'm done. And by this point now I was 18 and I got a job in an office, just like working as a receptionist. And that's when I started to kind of enjoy normal life. Like I met friends that weren't concerned about my weight. Mm. We would go to the pub at lunchtime and I kind of learned again how to socialize and how to eat without throwing it up.
Mm. Just on your body, how quickly did you manage to get a healthy relationship with food and your body? Because a lot of people listening to this might have been through situations like that or have children they're currently worried about. Mm. And I guess your sister was the launch pad, the kind of, you know, the pivoting point.
Yeah. It's hard to say really, but I do remember seeing a difference in myself, as in, yes, I started to put the weight back on, which at first you're a bit like, oh God. But at the same time, I saw my skin getting better and I saw myself smiling and actually enjoying life. Mm. And again, without realizing it, I realized that I wasn't counting calories.
Mm. And something you said before as well about why am I doing this? Because I'm not getting the work. Actually, there was a part of your mind that was quite rational about it.
Yeah.
It was almost like, well, that was for that job.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that job.
Yeah,
now,
and so. And the people that looked after me at my agency, I didn't particularly like. I didn't think that they were very nice. And I realised that I was losing weight for them. And then, yeah, I was just like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. And I do think because I kind of felt ashamed as well. Like I felt like I'd let my family down. I felt like I'd let myself down. So I definitely needed to make a change. I had to do, and I was 18. Mm. And I was very aware that I was young and I had the rest of my life. And I was like, I need to make a change.
But at that age, you know, being told you're beautiful, being told this can be a career, you can make a career out of your looks and make a career of how, you know, how the world perceives you. You know, that's mentally, you've got to have some kind of fortitude to kind of go into that career and believe there is something else about you that is valuable and worthwhile. So that is also kind of mixed up, isn't it, with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Without that grounding in your family, you can see how people get completely lost and then go down other destructive behaviours.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, my family, we're all so close and they've been solid. And I do think having that support behind me is gold. And if there's anyone listening that has maybe got a teenage daughter or son who's going through some eating disorders, I think the best advice I can probably give those parents is to just kind of have some empathy and really be there and like kind of don't always kind of say you need to do this, you need to do that, we need to go and see a doctor. And I didn't do any of those things. That my therapists were literally, it was my sister. I know lots of people might not have a sister and she is very headstrong. And I think back then as well, I think nowadays eating disorders are much more of a recognized mental illness, whereas back then they weren't really. So I was never told to go and see a therapist because I don't really think it was really available. We weren't aware of it. But also, yeah, my sister was just like, you're not doing this anymore. And I was like, okay.
Is she older than you?
Yeah, she's older.
Yeah.
She's fabulous. So what was I saying? Yes. So
the reinvention.
The reinvention. Voice, yeah. So this was quite a turning point for me because I had to basically do a huge 180. I was working in the office and it suddenly got really dull and I wasn't enjoying it at all. And my boss left suddenly. I don't know what happened. I think he got fired or something, but he left and I was doing nothing. This is now the year 2000. And a friend of mine who was at my agency as another model and also quit, she was like, I've heard of an agency that takes on girls that are a size UK 12 and up. It's called plus size modeling.
Plus size for 12.
Right. And my first thought was, well, that's weird. No. Because I was like, no, I can't possibly do that. And then the more I looked into it, I was like, well, maybe I can, because actually what I'm doing right now is really dull and there must be more to life than sitting at a desk doing absolutely nothing. I remember like covering my whole hand in sellotape and then just drawing over my hand. I mean, that was my life. So there's got to be more to life than this. And so I just contacted this agency, sent in a few pictures, and within, I think, a week, they're like, we want to take you on. We've already got a client interested and want to shoot you. And I was terrified because I thought, I can't.
You're stepping back into that.
Yeah.
That whole life.
Yeah.
Again.
I was like, I can't go through what I went through again. But at the same time, I can't sit at my desk with sellotape on my hand all the time. So we decided as a family that I would try it out for 6 months and see how it got on. And because I could be curvier and I didn't have to lose weight for anyone, I could be me. And my first job was with Marks and Spencer's and it was lingerie. And again, that was a bit terrifying because I was like, I'm getting my clothes off in front of everyone. And I knew that I was a little bit heavier, but I looked great. You know, my body looked great. And
did you like your body at this point?
I did actually. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Did you have a boyfriend or?
I did have a boyfriend, yes. And he also liked my body, so that's good.
But I'm just thinking back to the scrawny 18-year-old, 17-year-old who really, you know, was being very destructive. That's that's quite the leap, isn't it? To be
it's
able to take your clothes off.
Yes, it was quite the leap. Definitely. But also I think the team when I shot Marks and Spencer's were brilliant. Mm. And because I was arriving in the studio and everyone knew that I didn't have to be stick thin, that I definitely felt much more kind of celebrated and appreciated and acknowledged that I was there for that size. Whereas usually I turn up to a studio and people be like, you're bigger than we thought, you know,
You're not going to fit into the clothes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then call the agency and get out. So yeah, so it was nice to turn up to studios knowing that that wasn't going to happen. And so we did this shoot and it was great. And to cut a long story short, you know, I ended up doing what's now called curve modelling, which is a lot better than plus size modelling. Did that for, well, the best part of, I think, 15, 20 years. I had the best time. Shop for all sorts of brands all over the world, showing off my curves, representing women with curves. And it was very healing and very inspiring for not just me, but other women out there who wanted to see...
people who look like themselves.
People, yeah.
Well, exceptionally beautiful versions of people that...
I mean, you know, like, yeah.
but that is, you know, such a positive transition and a great story. But it hits another slight bump in the road because yes. As a lot of people listening will also have experienced in their various careers, perhaps not quite as brutally as you did, when you started having a family, you found there were other challenges yes. and fences to overcome.
Yes. So when I announced to my agency that I was pregnant and I was 31, I was literally was just like, okay, see you later, you're done, bye-bye. You know, don't come back. You're like...
yeah, that's one curb we weren't going to sell you on.
Yeah. And so again, that was another bump in the road, as you say, and something that I wasn't aware of. But lots of people are like, oh, so fine, you can do maternity modelling. But what a lot of people didn't know, and I did do a campaign on this, is a lot of maternity models aren't actually pregnant. They're wearing a fake bump. Mm. So I didn't actually do any maternity modelling. And
then when they do that, of course, they don't have any extra weight on their legs,
no,
their arms,
no.
their back.
No, they look
they're
perfect.
They're just perfect with a yeah. bump. Yeah.
Which is why I announced this on my Instagram, kind of saying... fun fact for you. I mean, I'm jumping ahead a bit because that's with my third pregnancies. But with my first one, I wasn't on social media at all. And so when my agency said, you're done, it was very daunting because I was bringing life onto the planet with no job. And obviously my husband had a job, but, you know, we were in a point where we were like, well, oh God, like, what the hell are we going to do?
You so again, back to wrapping sellotape around your hair.
Well, I mean, I was back to it. Yeah. And so then I worked in an office again, and that was actually at the agency that I'm at now. I just went there working as an agent because I knew the industry. And then had my second baby, again, not on social media. And then I realized that it was going to be too difficult for me to go back full time in the office. You know, they weren't open to flexible working. This is obviously back before COVID when that wasn't really a thing. Mm. And by this point, my eldest son was at school, so the pickup was like 3:30, and it just became impossible to try and juggle everything. So I was just at home wondering what the hell I'm doing with my life and feeding my six-month-old son. And my agency emailed me saying, don't know if you're ready for this or if you're still interested, but a modeling shoot has come in Italy, great photographer, great fashion stylist. Do you want to do it? Are you ready? And I looked at my son, who I was feeding, and I just said to him, oh, I guess mama's still got it. And then I swear it was this light bulb moment where it just went ping above my head. And I was like, oh, that's quite catchy. Mama's still got it. And I stopped feeding my son, which he was very annoyed about.
Because you said, I've just created a brand,
yeah,
child.
I was like, it's happened. Something's happened here. And I looked if the domain name was available. It was. Bought it immediately. And then suddenly got really excited that I was going to do something, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I knew I was going to do it. And I did. And I joined social media, which was terrifying, but I knew that I had to. Mm. Everyone was on social media and I knew that I wasn't getting work because I wasn't on social media. Got the domain name, Mama Still Got It, and kind of wanted to show that regardless of my age or my size or the fact that I've got children, that I've still got it. I still want to work. I still want to look good. Still want to feel good. I want to represent women that are the same age as me or older or younger, that have children, that don't have children, that want to look good, feel good. And it started from there. And it's done, yeah.
It's done it's, amazingly it's well. Yeah, it's done brilliantly. Worked. So how many years are we going back now then from the buying the domain name?
2017.
Because it really started to change for you in lockdown as well, didn't it?
Yes.
Because that's when you started doing, because all that positive kind of representation piece was fantastic and people really kind of got into that. But then you started becoming a comedy actress.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. Honestly, I'll tell you what happened. So yeah, COVID hit, and I think my content before was, you know, there was some comedy in there, but it was
before... Yeah, because you were kind of debunking a little bit, weren't you? Those kind of mumfluencers who were perfect and everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And you were saying, look, it's not always perfect,
of course, which we all know. Yeah, we all know, yeah. But my page was never perfect. I did try and be that perfect Instagrammer. And I was like, I can't, it's a lie. It's not me. I can't do this. And I found that more hard work than, so COVID hit. And I was really, like, I'm sure we all were, I was really anxious about it all. We didn't know what the hell was going on. It was quite scary, but it was scary. And I remember saying to my husband, because he kept telling me about the news and all the numbers and what's happening all around the world. And I was like, babe, I can't listen to this. It's making me feel really anxious and I can't do it. And I wasn't sleeping at night. And then the schools closed. I had three kids at home. You know, where we were living at the time was this small flat in Clapham. My husband was at home and it was like, this is shit. This is really hard. And I then discovered TikTok. And I started scrolling through TikTok and I found myself really laughing because the content was so funny and it was so different from Instagram at the time. That, you know, at the time, Instagram didn't have reels. Mm. So then I found myself laughing a lot and that really kind of soothed me and healed me. And I thought, well, look, if this is helping me, maybe I can do something and help other people. So then I just continued doing funny content on really boring, mundane motherhood.
And you had a character, Bernie.
So Bernie came later, yes. So Bernie came in the second lockdown, which was even worse. Bernie's the little hands.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think Bernie's more popular than I am, but whatever, it works. So during the second lockdown, so now it's January 2021, and this lockdown was, I think, for all of us, even worse because it was cold. It was the second lockdown. Christmas had just been cancelled and everyone was so over it. And I was at home working, which was impossible with three kids when you're trying to homeschool three kids and work. And my middle child came up to me and I think at the time he must have been five and he did the classic, mummy watch, over and over and over. And I'm watching him.
Nothing's happening.
And then he does this like little jump. And he's like, ha ha! And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. That's the 10 minutes I'm never going to get back today. But obviously it happens all the time. And then I thought, well, that's quite funny. Maybe I can turn that into a video. So I said, oh, can you do that again? And I'll film you. No. Like, fine. And then I thought, well, how am I going to, I really want to do this again, but I want to make out that obviously there is a child involved. And then I remembered these hands that had been given to me when my third child was born. Randomly, my friend gave me, you know, a bottle of champagne and these plastic hands.
What, an extra pair of hands with it?
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Exactly. She was like, you've got three kids, here's an extra pair of hands.
So she's kind of the co-founder then.
I mean, you know, she is, and she's very aware of it. So I remembered that I had these hands, like kind of, that I'd thrown in like a drawer that everything's in that you'd never look at, but you do need them. So I picked the hands up and I shot this mummy watch video, which I guess was my first Bernie video without realizing it. And then I was like, is this weird? Like, are people going to get this? So I sent it to my mum, who's a mother of three and a single mother. And I thought, if anyone's going to get it, she is. She's like, I don't get it.
Your mum said that?
Yeah, she's like, I don't get it. I was like, how can you not get it? She was like, who are you supposed to be? And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, mum, don't worry about it. Forget it. It's like, obviously you've like blocked
that's
out
a bit
how,
destroying,
yeah,
isn't it?
I was like, you've blocked out how difficult motherhood was for you.
Yeah.
So I sent it to my best mate who's got two kids and she was in the same situation that I was in. She was like, yeah, I can relate to that. That's funny. So I was like, fine. I was like, I'm going to post it on Instagram. We'll see what happens. If it doesn't do well, if people find it in any way insulting, I'll just delete it. No problem. And it went mental. But then I get messages saying, can we have more little hands, please? I was like, oh, all right. All of it is so accidental. It just happened so organically. I did a video with the little hands. And at the time I was wearing this pink hoodie, which I loved. And I was wearing a pair of glasses. Thought nothing of it. And so I did a video And again, because it was during COVID and lockdown, I wasn't really changing my clothes that often. So I was wearing this pink hoodie all the time. And then it wasn't until someone, one of my followers, messaged me saying, oh, I get so excited when I see the pink hoodie and the glasses and the hands. I was like, oh, right.
So it's a uniform.
It's now a uniform. I was like, thanks for that, follower. Yeah. I will continue to do this then. It's just evolved in a way that now I now sell my own pink hoodies. Two kids.
So what do your kids think of Little Hands? Now they're getting a bit older. Do they realise the joke's on them?
They do. They've been really helpful, actually. Like my two eldest ones, they sometimes give me ideas.
They get material.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the ideas are good and sometimes they're rubbish. But my eldest son, his friends follow me on TikTok. And I said to him, I was like, is that weird for you? And they're like, no, they think you're great. And I was like, oh, thank God for that. They're like, yeah, they think you're cool. You're like, oh my God, am I cool?
Oh,
like,
that's so unheard of.
I'm in my 40s and I'm cool.
That is amazing.
Yeah, preteen thinks I'm cool.
He's 11, 12.
He's 11, yeah.
Right.
And
I wonder how much longer you've got.
I know. But I've actually given him...
I think it might last a long time.
I'm hoping. He's
because
now in
comedy
charge.
Is the leveller, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think everyone likes to laugh. And, yeah. But I must admit, my son, because now he's in the preteen phase, he did say... I said, I've got an idea for a video that all like preteens do. And it's like, you know, everything you say is answered with like a bra or a bro. And he's like, bra, you can't do that. And I'm like, you just did it. And he's like, no, mum, you can't do that. And I was like, okay, I did it anyway. And
yeah, this will be the territory now where you're going to have to negotiate on whether or not he thinks it's because you're getting quite close to the bone. And of course, as he heads into puberty and his emotions and his hormones are kind of like changing, it's whether or not he then. So yeah, so good luck on that one. Bernie might have to kind of really come into their own a bit more.
But he did like the video, to be fair, and his friends liked it, so that's good.
That's the thing, you've got to keep appealing to his friends. Yes. As long as his friends are on side.
If his mates think I'm cool, then it's fine.
Then he'll be happy to sanction anything, pretty sure.
Exactly.
So you are a really great example of somebody who has recreated, reinvented, reimagined, you know, kind of what you can do and how you can do it, and with great kind of natural entrepreneurialism almost along the way. And also, I think the really empowering and inspiring thing about your story is to be able to change the direction of travel from that teen who was, you know, in the grip of an eating disorder. Mm. And obviously that could have gone in many different directions and to have such a positive, healthy body image now. But you, as we mentioned there, have got kids who are heading into their teens. What you see on the platforms that you broadcast now, on Instagram and on TikTok, you know, it's so different to when we were young women dealing with all those things and young teenagers. And it's not all positive, is it, obviously? You must now kind of look at that and think, when you've got a young daughter coming up, that is a scary landscape.
There are some parts of being on social media when you're younger, which I find terrifying. I don't know if you saw the other day, I put on my Instagram something because I was on the train.
Yeah, the conversation that you...
Yeah, and there was a group of like, I want to say they're 15, maybe they were younger, because I think girls now look so much older than their years. Mm. You know, they're wearing so much makeup and lashes and how much money or the beauty products that they use on their skin, which they don't need. No. And it's all because they're watching these influencers online. But yes, this group of girls on the train were talking about what apps they're using to distort their body, to make their bodies thinner or their boobs bigger or their bum bigger or smaller. And it made me so angry and really worried. And I couldn't help, like literally, I was like this out of body moment. I just like stood up and like went over to these girls on the train. I was like, guys, I was like, you don't need that. You know, I really hope that they listened, because, you know, as a group of girls, they were just like looking me up and down, you know, chewing gum, being like, well, you know, what do you know?
Did they ask you any questions back?
No, they didn't say anything. I just said, you don't need apps. Your body's perfect the way it is. Look after it. It's precious. And then I realized, okay, Louise, what are you doing?
But sometimes I think you can't help yourself.
I couldn't help myself. I could not believe the conversation, because these are the conversations that you and I did not have back then. What app are we going to use to make our body look different? Mm. I mean, it's crazy even thinking about it. And it really does anger me, because you get fed ads on TikTok for these apps that are targeted for these vulnerable girls that are getting influenced. They literally fed them, use this app. And the apps are all called really something, you know, sexy, like sexy body or better body. And you're like, how is this even allowed? Mm. It scares the life out of me. And my niece, who's 10, I've seen her start to kind of look at her face in apps. And when the certain filters make your lips bigger and your eyes bigger and your cheekbones more chiseled and all these things. And she's 10 and she's screen grabbing it and then putting it as her screensaver on her phone. And I'm like, no, I can't bear it. But it's happening. And I did say on my Instagram, and I really feel passionate about this, that I would love to go around schools and just talk to the kids and just kind of give them, I don't know, like a pep talk or an inspirational talk about this. Because everyone's going to have a phone. Everyone's going to be scrolling. Everyone's going to be in competition with each other, especially girls. I really feel like girls have this need to kind of keep up with everyone else and be like these influencers they see. But you have to remember that these influencers, you know, it's their job and they're doing it all day, every day. And they've got the lighting and they've got everything in place and they probably are using these filters. I don't know. It just really scares me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Our expert today, I'm delighted to say, there she is Charlotte Green.
Hello.
Hello, Charlotte, who
Hi,
doesn't just get thrown together this, Louise, you see, because Charlotte is a stylist of some repute and also experience, many, many years in the industry working in magazines and with brands and private clients. I declare an interest. Charlotte and I have worked together for about, 20 years, Charlotte, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say 20. Yeah, long time.
You're going to go
still
for 19
using
then,
one of the same skirts that we bought 20 years ago. We're still reusing.
We reuse a lot. And Charlotte is similar age. Actually, she's just about to enter her 50th year. So very much in the midlife. So as well as the experience with styling, I think you kind of know as well, Charlotte, don't you? The different challenges a lot of your clients have when they're almost, it's the over 40s, I think, isn't it? It's that change from the 30s to the 40s that seems to throw people into a bit of a different headspace. Should I dress differently? What should I be looking out for? And, you know, why should I want to wear a different length skirt, but I feel like I should? You know, there's all those kind of things that happen. Our bodies change, but they're not necessarily a different size, but they're just a different formation. And I think it's those midlife challenges that sometimes throw women. So what have you noticed the kind of the worries are for people that you dress over the age of 40?
I've been going to a lot of women lately in this midpoint, and it's like they're invisible. They don't want kind of too much attention. They've still got suits from when they had their first job. They can't kind of see the wood for the trees. And I've been going to a lot of kind of wardrobe edits and trying on what they've got. And not because of my brilliance, just because I've helped them. They've just kind of finished the day feeling like they're a new woman and not necessarily going out buying lots of new clothes, but just looking at things in a different way. And I always start the day with get good underwear. You know, at this age, everything starts to shift and a good bra can, you know, really sculpt, lift, change that whole silhouette. So that's usually where we start on the day. And so these poor ladies are kind of stripped down to their underwear. But a good foundation is always where we start. And then we take it from there, really.
And then when you're looking at people's wardrobes, and often there's a kind of a clash of styles. You look at people's wardrobes and there'll be all kinds of periods of their life coming together because they're a bit scared to throw stuff out. And that's psychological as well, I think, for a lot of people, isn't it, with their wardrobes. They kind of think, well, I'll hang on to that because one day I will fit into that again. Or I'll hang on to that because I think I had a great time in it and maybe I'll have a great time again. And you're quite ruthless.
Oh, I'm extremely ruthless. Some women just look terrified. You know, they're in their underwear and then I'm suddenly throwing out all their precious dresses. Put stuff away for the children, grandchildren, whoever you want to give it away to. But also there's some items in there that you just, maybe they need a little nip or a tuck or change the silhouette or pair it with something different. Or is there a print you love the colour combo, but it's too scary? You know, maybe put the camel and the yellow together in a different way. So usually we always keep stuff. Don't worry, I'm not getting rid of everything. But they do seem to lose their identity. And we also talk a lot on the day about what their life involves, whether they are going to the office, whether they're doing the school run, because I think the kind of function of the clothes is so important. Not only for me, that definitely has to be comfortable, but I also think it's a form of armor, whether, you know, you're going to put that blazer on and go and tackle a big business meeting or tackle a parents' evening. I think it's, for me, it represents who you are, and it is that armor to go and kind of face the day. The confidence that you see these women when they try on a pleated skirt and maybe do a little half tuck, which they haven't, you know, they just don't sometimes know how to wear things. And it's just, you know, even if you don't have me around for the day, I think, you know, if you can put a few hours aside to try on your clothes again and do a few different things, I think you'd be amazed at what you'd come up with. I really do. You look at things in a different way.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not everybody's going to be able to have a day with you. And I think it's really important to try those clothes on and then take a few pictures as well, because
definitely take
what
pictures.
You see isn't in the mirror isn't necessarily what the whole outfit looks like. And then
No. You
just feel more confident knowing that those things work. So you haven't got to try on 16 different items on a Monday morning.
No, who's got time for that?
Fit.
You want to have a few, I just call them a few bankers, whether you have a little silk dress that you know is just going to look right. You can dress it up with an earring or with a shoe. I always say get your staples sorted and then get a few showstoppers. And in that, I mean accessories like a brilliant shoe. It's a bit of a full stop for an outfit, a great clutch. So you're not spending a fortune, but you get your staples right and then you can just add in those showstoppers. And then your clothes are quite versatile. So you can go from day to night and they work quite hard for you. Because no one's got lots to spend on clothes nowadays.
No, and time as well, I think. And knowing you can throw something together quite quickly and feel good in it all day. What do you think the main kind of confidence crisis when it comes to the midlife is in terms of, well, for personally, you know, I found myself knowing that length wasn't right on me, you know, for say a skirt and feeling like, well, actually, well, that's not quite right. And I don't want to say that you should never wear a skirt that short when
no.
you get beyond a certain age, but there was just something about length and I can't quite, and maybe it's having a teenage daughter and knowing that she would be in that length skirt and I don't want to be.
Yes, maybe. But also when you're having those trying on sessions, if you know, usually maybe by this age, you know what you like, what you don't like, what works for you. But I think you've got to kind of get comfortable with your body, whatever that body is, whether you're an hourglass and you pop that belt on to accentuate the waist or you're a little bit of a pear shape. You know, I like to keep a lot of tension up, good necklace, a polo neck, you know, kind of balance out your body. So if you can get to know your body, then I think you can help it with what you put on it. And I always think you have a few key bits in your wardrobe to get you through certain events that are always going to pop up. But I don't think you need lots. I don't think you need lots. I think emotionally we hang on to things. So I'm very good at repurposing or giving to charity. And then you have this capsule wardrobe that's not a uniform. It works for you and it shows what you're about. But it's just a lot less time spent trying things on. You know you're going to go to that and it's going to work.
I've got a time frame. I've got a year I have in my wardrobe. Some people have 6 months if you haven't worn an item for a certain period of time.
And really?
So I had wore this lovely wool dress for dinner pre-Christmas to a friend's for dinner. And she said, oh, I haven't seen that for a while. I said, you know, it was going to have to get thrown out if I hadn't worn it tonight because it was on the cusp of a year.
It had to have an outing.
not really expensive things, not really like black tie dresses that. But, you know, day-to-day things, I think if I haven't worn you for over a year, am I ever going to wear you again? And it has to be really special to keep. Do you know what I mean? Oh. Like, otherwise it's kind of taking up space that I kind of feel, you know, it needs to, and when I say move on, it could move on to one of the kids. Mm. Well, it's not hardly likely to be Reuben, but only because he's 6'6", not because he doesn't want to wear my clothes.
Yeah.
But he'll kill me for that. But, you know, it might be something to Lois or my mum. I've got lots of cousins. So, you know, things move around the family.
Move
I
around.
Love it when something comes back as well. So when I say move on, they're not always moved out to a charity shop.
I've still got a top from Cookeye. probably should get rid of that.
I remember Cook Eye.
Yeah. But do you still wear it, Louise?
No.
No. You might have to relook at the Cook Eye top.
It's completely sheer. Do you want that sheer Cook Eye thing?
Yes.
So you're like wearing a bra. It's very 90s.
Yeah. But do you know what? It'll come around again for your daughter.
I don't know if I want her wearing it, to be honest.
Totally inappropriate.
So, Charlotte, you've had a bit of a think for us about kind of your top tips for the midlife woman who is wanting to have a little evaluation of the wardrobe, maybe some staples that should be in there, maybe some, you know, key things that they should take away from our chat.
Now, I've kind of mentioned a few, but get your underwear right, get in that wardrobe, know your shape, and then work on those staples and those showstoppers. So it just is
all
interchangeable.
And what are the staples for you? What should every woman
I guess a jean. My husband goes mad when I say a jean, a pair of jeans. And, you know, I know you've got to do a bit of a try on jeans. Not every shape suits everyone, but usually, you know, a dark, slim-fitting leg, dark denim jean is going to take you from day to night. And it's going to do the job. I'd say a blazer that you can dress up for the office or you can wear with your jeans to a brunch. A cashmere that you can find in a vintage store. It doesn't have to be high end.
Well, Uniqlo do great cashmere, don't they?
Yeah,
there are lots of places that Marks and Spencer's every year produces.
Yeah, but I always think that looks quite luxurious. You know, again, with jeans, a pleated skirt, cashmere cardigan over a silk dress, belted. So there's so many ways you can do it. I think you need a good heel, a good flat, a trainer and a boot, if that was for footwear.
And they're the staples.
Yes, I would say. And I know everyone says, oh, you shouldn't wear leopard print when you're older, but I love a little bit of leopard print. I think it's gorgeous in and just, you know, and also I think you need to show your personality. I don't want to kind of give you the key staples and everyone's in the same uniform. You do need to add those bits to show your personality and what you're comfortable in.
Yeah, and I think that's, you always laugh at me when I say, but it's not comfortable. She used to, especially when I was in my 30s, I feel like, this isn't comfortable. I've got to stand up and present in this for 6 hours. I don't care if it's not comfortable. It looks amazing.
No, you look great. So, I've changed now. I've got older. I realise comfort is key. So that's all right.
But you also, you wrote something, I think, on your Instagram account, Charlotte, recently about the fact that you're about to walk out the door. Charlotte's got four kids and two daughters who are teenagers. And I think you and Matilda had the same pair of Adidas tracksuit bottoms on, and you had a moment where you thought, oh god, we're wearing the same, but then you looked at the way you both styled it so differently, and I have that
totally
as well
different
with, sometimes with Lois. Like, I'm wearing Adidas Sambas, which I inherited by accident because her boyfriend and I both bought her some at Christmas, so I inherited a pair, but we wear them so differently. Like, you know, she would wear them with a short skirt, I would never would. So how would you and Matilda different in your tracksuit bottoms?
Matilda had a trainer, and I think I had a loafer on with mine, with some grey socks and a grey cashmere. Matilda looked a lot cooler, but I didn't feel out of place. I didn't, everyone else thought I looked out of place, but I didn't feel out of place. I felt comfortable. I was ready to go with four children to the school run. And I do think style, I don't believe it's what you wear, it's how you wear it. So I do think style is ageless. I don't think we should get to a certain age and think, oh, we shouldn't do that. We should cut our hair short. I think, you know, you've just got to be comfortable in who you are. That I don't think you should compromise.
Yeah, I think in terms of, like, you know, you said it's not a uniform, but actually I think it's comforting to know this is the outfit kind of selection that I'm going to be doing the school run in. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the things I like to wear in the morning, or these are the things that, you know, are kind of take me through weekend breakfasts and dinners and things. And actually it might not be a uniform, but you kind of feel confident knowing that they're there.
It's going to do the job. It's going to work hard for you. And, you know, and also I think you've just got to kind of check yourself in the mirror and then forget about what you're wearing.
Like, my mom's a classic example of this. She is 76 and she has stuck to the same style for so long that she's kind of scared to get out of her comfort zone of, like, what she thinks suits her. And whenever she comes to my house, like, guaranteed, nearly every time, I'm like, take it off, try this on. And she's like, oh, I can't possibly wear that. It's too young, or it's, I know that it won't fit me or suit me. And I'm like, just put it on. And honestly, it's like, you know that scene out of Cinderella where she transforms into the dress? And I can see it in her eyes and her face. And she's like, oh my God, this does look really good. She's like, I would never have thought this looked good on me. I'm like, because you need to get out of the routine of thinking that that won't look good or that won't look good because you haven't tried it. And so she went to a New Year's Eve party just gone. And she was like, I've got nothing to wear. What should I wear? So I came around with, like, loads of glitter and sequin tops and stuff. She's like, I can't wear that, Louise. I'm 76 years old. And I was like, just try it on. And she ended up wearing a silver sequined jumpsuit. Wow. And she looked insane and she felt insane. And you could see it, like, her confidence just went through the roof.
Just grew.
And I just grew and you could see it. It was electric. Yeah. It was amazing.
Well, like you said, showstoppers earlier on, Charlotte, but you also said like a lot of women in this period kind of almost want to disappear into the background. Mm. And actually, you know, it makes me feel joyous when I see somebody walk in with something like that, because they do look so happy and they light up the room, don't they? And they have that confidence.
Yeah, we need
as
to
well
celebrate that.
Almost. Well, both things happen. The outfit gives them confidence. You know, they then kind of grow into that. And I think it's really important to not feel that you have to be the kind of, you know, the
fade away
in the background.
No, I think we've got, you know. Oh, my mum always used to say, you know, quite conscious when you're a teenager. And I remember I think I was going to a ball. I probably did look awful. And then my mum said, well, who do you think is going to be looking at you? And she wasn't being mean. She was just like, get your clothes on, look in the mirror, and off you go and enjoy yourself. And I think that's what we've got to do, really. Get your armour on and then just go out
not
and
worried.
Enjoy life.
Not be so
not
worried.
Not worry and be conscious of what you're wearing. Because actually, you know, it's not really about that in the big scheme of things.
No, but it's you feeling good is important, but not, and not being kind of, you know, paranoid that you're...
I feel the same when people put on a bikini and like worried about stepping out onto the beach. Like, I kind of feel like no one's actually looking at you. We're so worried about how we look and how we feel, but actually no one else, everyone else is so caught up in how they look that no one's actually looking at anyone else.
No, you're absolutely right. Off you go.
Somebody's a naked man walking. Nobody's noticed them. Nobody's noticed.
Actually, a naked man did walk past me once in Ibiza and it was horrendous.
That's
another podcast.
Cruel. Well, I spent a bit of time in Brazil during the Football World Cup and near Copacabana Beach, and wow, there are some... Yeah,
no one worries there.
People do look there. Nobody worries there. It doesn't matter what age you are there. You're never too old for a thong on Copacabana Beach.
No.
I can tell you. I can see from my hotel room. I mean, it was extraordinary. And in the end, I kind of started thinking, well, who's the one that's an idiot for thinking that this is not possible? Me. You're like, God, these guys are all happy. They're all having a great time.
Yeah,
so, you know, why not? So, yeah, you've 70 years old. I'm going to get my first thong for the beach. Yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
And brands, Charlotte, I'm on the high street. Do you think the brands now are catering better for mid-life?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I think they, you know, I was listening to a podcast the other day about someone who had a brand and they were saying function is so important. These women are busy and they are going from day to night. You know, they need the versatility in the clothes. And I think, yeah, I think it is catering. And I was styling for a big brand the other day and, you know, it was a bit like me and my daughter. The young in-house fashion stylist said, oh, I love that top. And I was thinking, I love that top too. And I know we would have worn it different ways, but I do think these brands are catering. And I do think, you know, they're using older models, they're using curvier models. And I think that's great. You know, I've seen that shift.
Louise Boyce, you wouldn't be upset if Louise Boyce turned up on a shoot, would you? You'd be
thrilled.
Delighted.
I don't think she needs my help, but yeah, I'd be absolutely thrilled.
Let's do it.
One last thing. I think, let's do it. I love a shoulder pad. I think as we get older, and I don't have great posture, our shoulders start to slope. I love framing. Look after yourself. You know, good fabric as well. A heavier fabric always helps as we get a little older, I always think.
Yeah, I think shoulders, and then you can nip in the waist, you know, belted jacket or something. It just gives you that kind of structure, doesn't it? Which is really good. And I'm always thinking about because of telly, things like that, because fashions don't always translate on television in the same way. So those things. In fact, just last night I was sending Charlotte videos of three different coats and how they would work sitting on bar stools. I was trying to get Kenny to video
them. And I was
them,
saying, I don't think that's going to translate.
No, it's not going to translate.
Kenny did a very good job.
He's not enjoying his job as a videographer. Charlotte, thank you so much for all
thank
your tips.
Thank you for having
me. And if there was one brand of jean at the moment you think that that the midlife, because jeans I think are really important. Who do you think is getting it right?
I think I love M&M. I think they're getting it right. Bowdoin do such a range of jeans as well. Something there for everyone.
Bowdoin and M&M, okay. There are other brands, obviously, but...
obviously, yes, absolutely.
I totally agree. M&M's my go-to at the moment, actually, because it's also designed by a woman.
Good job.
Yeah, which makes a difference, doesn't it? Yeah. Thanks, Charlotte. Lovely to see you, Charlotte.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Do you still enjoy clothes? Because when it's been your life to wear other people's and make them look good, it could be a bit of a busman's.
No. So I... if I go shopping, which I, to be fair, I barely go actual physical shopping. The idea of trying clothes on in a shop makes me feel physically sick because I try clothes on all the time, like in my job. So I never go into a shop and try anything on. I will probably just buy it off the rack, hope for the best, or buy it online and then send it back. But obviously I love clothes. I love them. But I do, it's interesting talking to Charlotte because I do find myself sometimes getting into this point where I'll just chuck anything on, especially when it's like the school run. And then I find myself kind of staying it. And then you kind of catch yourself in the mirror and think, yeah, that's not a great look, actually. And I also do think if I make a conscious effort in the morning to like look better, like your outfit is amazing. Like if I put that on, I know that I would have a better day. Mm. Whereas if I was just staying in like tracksuit bottoms and stuff, I know that it's power dressing, isn't it? I know that I would feel more confident and powerful if I dressed the part. And obviously I do want to go to meetings and stuff like that. And I love finding new outfits and styles that suit me because I don't want to stick to what I've been wearing, you know, forever.
I think that's why the idea of how you have your staples and then you can bring stuff in that is fun and different and you're not and you've got the basics kind of there and then you kind of layer on that, I think is really, really good advice. And the other thing which Charlotte didn't mention there, which I found really useful, just if you're really busy, I kind of, and I know David Beckham did this to an absolute kind of, you know, ridiculous degree in the documentary about the Beckhams, I do plan for the week.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
and sometimes
really?
It's more.
Maybe I'll try that.
So I just go, if I know I've got two or three things that are quite big things, I think, right, okay. So I'm not then worrying, oh, they're at the dry cleaners, or that needs turning up. Oh, I forgot that had a stain on it.
Yes.
Or, you know, so I just, even if I just get them all out and hang them up and know mentally, well, they work.
Yeah.
And that's
I
fine.
I should try that.
So it kind of, that kind of works for me. And it also, if I'm going to work out first thing, putting my workout gear makes me commit to that.
Oh, so, no, that definitely makes me commit. Yeah. If it's all there already, then I will put it on and I will go. But if it's not, and I wake up at like 6 and I think I'll go to the gym and it's dark and I'm like, no, clothes aren't ready, I'm going back to bed.
All I've got to do is actually open that drawer, but it is a psychological thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, the planning, I think, is really important. So Louise, I'm sure because of the success of Bernie and all of the videos, you must have had lots of interest from other areas that you probably never thought you would venture into. The book, obviously.
The book,
is huge.
So exactly, like it's, I never thought, if you'd said to me, 4 years ago, you're going to be known on Instagram for little hands called Bernie and you're going to have a book and all this stuff, I would be like, no, you're out of your mind. Come on, this is crazy. But it's incredible what could happen. No one knows what's going to happen in life, and that's the joy of life. You never know what's around the corner.
But you said yes to things as
I say yes to things. And also, I think I really stepped out of my comfort zone doing things like Bernie and being funny. Like I'm, if you'd asked my friends and family if I was the funny one, they would say no.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know where it came from. I don't know.
Is there a pressure now to deliver when you're with people?
Well,
do you feel like they're expecting you to be a gag a minute?
Well, virtually? Yeah. And like, I, like when I'm at home and I'm filming just me behind with my camera, you know, I don't give a crap. So I there's nothing holding me back. I know that I can edit it or delete it. It's up to me. But I did this chat show, a live chat show. Now I think it must be 400, 500 people in the audience. The way that the presenter, what's the word I'm looking for? Perimenopause kicking in. Announce me? Introduce me. There you go. There it is. The way she introduced me, very nice, but she was like, she's hilarious and like so funny, funniest woman I've ever met. And so I'm in the wings going, oh God, I now have to make everyone laugh. Like pressure's on. And so, you know, you sit down in the chair and like the nerves, and then I couldn't think of anything, couldn't think of my own name. But luckily I did make them all laugh. So that was good. And as soon as you get that first laugh, you're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I don't know how stand-up comedians do it.
Well, then she's in two things there. She's told the audience you're funny and you've got to then deliver. But also once you are funny, the audience are happy to be laughing with you. So that's good because it kind of sets them up as well.
Yes.
To go, because they weren't paying for a comedian. They were looking forward to hearing from you. So she actually probably did you a favor there because you delivered and then they went with you. And now you know you can do that. Another scary moment that you've kind of stepped through.
But I really like stepping out of my comfort zone. I think it's really healthy to do that and to kind of see what you're capable of.
Even more in midlife. Keep pushing.
Yeah. Like I've started, I used to drum before I had kids.
I saw this.
Yeah. And I've just like, do you know what? I really enjoyed that. And I stopped drumming when I was pregnant because I thought it might affect the baby like an idiot. And I just thought, you know what? I really enjoyed that. So I started drumming again. And I could literally feel a sense of myself coming back. Like I found that part of that identity. I found it again. And I loved it. And
Do you drum at home?
No, but I think I need to get a drum kit, but one that is, you can get these ones Silences. Now that's like, yeah, like an electric one, you can plug headphones in. I think I'm going to get one at home because it's great for stress. Mm. And I genuinely love it. Mm. And I think I'm going to play it.
It must be good for the brain as well, all that left, right stuff. And
exactly.
Thinking,
you know, I feel like it's helping my memory. Mm. And like, so the teacher yesterday was teaching me all these kind of like, these different things that you can do. And the beginning of the lesson, I was like, I can't get my head, my feet and my hands aren't working together. I can't do it. By the end of the lesson, I was doing it. And I was like, this is great. And I think it is helping.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
Do you know Owain Wynne-Evans, the weatherman who did the thing?
Yes.
So I did Freeze of Fear with him. He was one of the people on the show. There were eight of us living in this tent in Northern Italy for 3 weeks. And as a treat, because we had no TV, no mirrors, no phones, we had to entertain ourselves at night when we finished doing our challenges. The producers gave us all a set of drumsticks because Owain was going to teach us on a table. We literally just had a table. And they took the mickey out of me because apparently I was very elaborate in my drumming, but I just loved it because it's such a cerebral challenge, isn't it? And and so you go for lessons.
Yeah, no, I do. There's a guy who doesn't live far from me. He's got this great studio all set up. And I go before school pickup, which is great. It's great. So I literally arrive at the school gates and I'm like, right, let's go. You know, and then you go, so yesterday I went to swimming lessons. I hate swimming lessons. but I think because I got rid of all of this kind of like pent up.
Yeah, you love the swimming lessons yesterday.
I was like, let's
do they
go.
Make you, because the school Ruben and Lois used to go to when we lived in London, they used to make a parent get in the pool.
I was in the pool.
Yeah, yeah. And because I had twins in the same class, I seem to be in that pool a lot. So that wasn't the best.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not. I've actually, that's one of my next videos that I'm planning on doing is like taking Bernie swimming. Because it is, actually, this is really funny. Sorry, this is going back to my mum and her, like, not really knowing fashion and stuff. So she came swimming the other day to watch. And she forgot that swimming pools are a really hot place. So she turned up wearing cashmere and she was so hot. She was just sweating, just watching, because you're obviously high up as well. Yeah. She ended up going to like the swimming gift shop and having to buy a t-shirt
with a local swim club.
Yeah, she was like, "Louise, it was so hot." I was like, "What? Of course it's hot.
What are you wearing?
Baths? Why are you wearing cashmere?" Oh dear, that's very funny,
Louise. I could chat for a lot longer with you, but unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you so much for being so honest and telling your story with, you know, such candor, and I think that will really resonate with a lot of people. But also, congratulations on getting. Getting through so many of those different challenges and coming out with such positivity. I haven't even had time to ask you about your lovely husband and what he makes of your newfound fame, because he seems to be he's kind of part of the act in a way, but he's never been thrust centre stage.
No, he's very supportive. In fact, it was his idea for me to start something online as well. Like when I was in this depth of like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. He was like, you should do something online. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And then, as I said, when I was feeding and I was like, Mama still got it, I was like, okay, that's the name. I'm going to go with it.
And he just went, yes.
Yeah. And he's designed all my logos, and I must admit, he's very supportive. And obviously when I do my videos, when I'm completely mocking him, I do show him first before I put it live just to make sure that, you know, it's okay. And he's always like, oh yeah, that's really funny. He's like, yeah, I do that. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're aware of it, then change it.
Millions of people have seen you do it on my Instagram again.
Yeah, but in the book, he does get a chapter of his own as like his right of reply, which is quite funny actually. So he's written things that I do that drives him crazy, which to be fair, I wasn't even aware of. So it's quite interesting.
Oh, and are you taking those on board?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll take them on board when he takes his ones on board.
A relationship expert might say.
Yeah, I know, probably. Yeah. I mean, maybe I have, but I wouldn't let him know that.
What is the most annoying thing to him that you do?
I never put petrol in the car. I never put my many cardboard boxes properly in the bin. I apparently don't tidy up after I've cooked. He's probably right, actually.
Yeah, but that in our house, that's the deal. I do the cooking and they tidy up.
Yeah.
So, but apparently I'm too messy when I cook.
Yeah, apparently I am as well. Mm.
I say it's artistry.
It is artistry. I don't blow out all the candles that I put on in the evening. Yeah, there's a few. I'm sure there's more.
None of these, I think, are deal breakers. I think we can work through them all.
They're not.
Thank you so much, Louise.
It's been a pleasure.
Your time.
Thank you.
And your grace. And best of luck with everything going forward.
I think
it's just going to go from strength to strength.
Well, good old Bernie.
Huge thanks to Louise for sharing what it's like to become an Instagram star at the midpoint, and on a serious note, to show that reinvention is possible at any age. And if you're tired of picture-perfect influencers, do follow Louise for a good laugh and a refreshing take on the realities of being a parent. You can also pre-order her book, Mama Still Got It, and for more tips and beautiful styling, follow Charlotte on @green.edit_. If this episode made you laugh, please leave a 5-star rating, or if you're a regular midpointer, I'd love to read your review of the podcast. This episode was produced by Spiritland Creative, and I'll be back next week. I hope you can join me then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.